All right. Hello and welcome to Inverticast Season 2. This is the very first episode that we are doing for Season 2, obviously. And we have Simon from the Mantis Garden, as usual.
Hello.
Myself, Leah from Tarantulia, of course. And we have Tyler Kirk from the Spider Shop. Hello, Tyler.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. We're so happy you could join us.
I'm honored to be here with you guys. Appreciate the invitation.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you accepting for sure. And it I will say it was also a lot of fun meeting you in person here in Denver. Actually, I think it was Castle Rock at the All-American Plant and Reptile Expo. That was cool.
Yeah, that was a good show. That was fun.
Good, I'm
Yeah.
glad.
I was wondering if you got to
Oh yeah.
I saw it and I thought, I wonder if you've gone to that, it's like would it been there?
Yeah, it was definitely a good show, and I really appreciated seeing more plant vendors and like all the reptile vendors, and there were quite a few tarantula and invert vendors too. So it was fantastic. It was a good show. I agree. It was hard for us getting there because it was snowing pretty good. Yeah, so and it was a trek from Denver. It's about 45 minutes or so to get to Castle Rock. But it was well worth it, absolutely. Okay, so
Think
let's I'll jump in and we got a question for Tyler. I was wondering, how did you start Spider Shop? How did you get like started with tarantulas and how did it all happen?
I was keeping tarantulas as a hobby, first of all, and I think it was not long before I started breeding them. There's a local here in my area that I found on Craigslist, which is Simon, it's kind of like this message board, I guess, or maybe you guys have Craigslist too. But he posted that he had tarantulas for sale, and I had maybe 10 at the time, and I went over just to see, what he was offering for sale online. And in his house was just like lined with walls. The walls were lined with shelves of tarantulas, kind of like Simon's wall behind him there.
Yeah.
He taught he took me in, open door, taught me everything, encouraged me to breed. And so I was like breeding early on, and had enough luck, where I would sell off the babies and buy more spiders, sell off the babies, buy more spiders, breeding, breeding females and things. And I was working as a counselor in a methadone clinic, and was working towards my master's degree in mental health. And I had, I had tarantulas, and I figured that I'd just make this website. And I remember at the time being like so nervous or afraid to like put myself out there in that way. Like I didn't know what I thought I had to lose, but I paid for the Shopify, and I spent a bunch of time uploading all these pictures and prices and designing the website and all that stuff. And 3 months after I started the website, I had enough sales that had more income from the website than I did from my job, So things weren't really going how I wanted and at work anyways. And so I was happy to put in my resignation. And I haven't looked back since. That's 3 years ago now, and just been blessed, with how things have worked out with the business. I've tried to replicate it with other businesses, do the Google ads, promote on Facebook, offer good, decent prices. I have not been able to replicate the success that Spider Shop has seen, so I wish I had the magic to every business working out like Spider Shop has, but that's just not the case. Yeah. So,
That's cool. That is really, really cool. 'Cause it sounds very familiar to kind of what I've been doing with my tarantulas. I mean, I haven't really been breeding. I will occasionally send out like a mature male, like I just did with Gavin from Ghosties Tarantulas, and he has my male Cereobagus levitum. So, or are they Kilobrachies or Cereobagus? I can never remember. Sometimes, yeah. Is it Kilobrachies?
What do I? No, it's the cobalt blue, right?
Yeah, cobalt blue.
Yeah, Cereopagus. Yeah.
Okay, so I was right. Over here, second guessing myself. Craziness.
Is that the one? Took over to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Is it Tennessee? Yeah. See, I didn't listen. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, I sent that over to, actually, I believe, Kentucky.
How's it going, that?
Yeah, he did really well. As far as I know, he paired up with the female real good. And then Gavin had a friend who also needed him. So he survived and went, and he was with a friend. And as far as I know, he's still doing okay. We're just waiting for the female to hopefully drop a sack. She's taking her sweet time, so.
Yeah.
What do you know, right?
That species has been pretty reliable for me in the past, getting them bred and then that they produce. I don't remember having much problems with that species.
Oh, nice.
To breed, good to know. Yeah.
Well, cool. So that opens up a whole nother question, is what's your favorite species to breed? If you have one.
This is a difficult question. I get it's asked a lot. Yeah. Favorite tarantula or favorite thing to breed. That's I had a group of the Celadonia recently. You know, I think I had 7 adult females, and
awesome.
You know, of course I'm looking at things that are maybe a little more valuable to breed. I definitely don't have the space to keep 5 and 6 females of 100 plus species, you know. That's not really my focus anymore. But yeah, most recently, I guess that would be Celadonia, right? It's trying to pump out a bunch of those.
Yeah, definitely. They're kind of a rare commodity in the States, so.
Are they easy to do?
Yeah, the first few times we had luck, you know, and it seems like they're easy to, hard to raise, you know, fragile, but then when they're big, they're easy, seems to be. But nice. We ended up with like 2 or 3 dud egg sacs, which was disappointing. And so I decided to sell the females, you know, like, forget this, like, which was disappointing. Yeah. I think we had 2 bad sacs, and 1 sack had like 2 babies that made it.
Oh, wow.
Big bad. Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll give them a miss. I don't know if we've got any of those. Maybe not. I don't know.
The Typhlocleina celadonia, that's definitely a dream spider for me. I don't have one yet. But I will say that I did have an order from Spider Shop recently, and I got another dream species, which is the Cimoroxygorum birupes, or birupes Cimoroxygorum.
Yeah.
Very cool tarantula, absolutely. Like, they're so pretty when they're adults. Mine is still just a little tiny guy, but I've got him in a cute little like vial like this, that he's already been burrowing like a beast. So it's perfect. I love it. And I'm really lucky that I live real close to a reptile store that always has like little tiny pinhead crickets. So I can feed them, you know, tiny little pinhead crickets, and they're live, and that way they get kind of that feel. So it's good. I love it. I really like that species. And then I also have the Celmopus victori. And that's another species that, like, before I didn't really have very good luck with them. And I think I was just like overwatering or just keeping them too moist or something. Because now the one that I have from Spider Shop has really been thriving. So I'm super thrilled about that.
Awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I still need to finish that video, but I will. It's on the list. So I actually just recently got back like a couple of days ago, because I was on a trip and I was in Minnesota, you know, visiting family and stuff. And it's quite a bit more humid there than it is here in Denver, and like green and lush and wonderful. And I saw fireflies, actual fireflies. Wow. Like, for the first time in my life, I actually saw them, you know, for real, because they're not here in Colorado. And so, yeah, it was definitely an experience. But you had a recent trip to Peru.
Wow.
And you got to hang out with Tom Patterson and Richard Stewart.
Yeah, that was a treat. That was awesome, yeah. For sure.
Can you talk a little bit about what Peru is like? And
yeah, what exactly maybe would you want to hear about?
Essentially, just like,
what's that, Simon?
Where in Peru did you go?
We flew into Lima, which is on the coast, kind of bigger city, and then we flew to Cusco the next day. Oh, wow. Which is southeast, and it's kind of highlands, you know, high elevation. Not all that much to see, kind of bare mountain hillsides, you know, a little bit of grass and rocks, and not, you know, areas with not much for trees, you know. Of course, we went down into the cloud forest, which is a little lower elevation, and there's lush, you know, big, what, philodendron leaves, you know, rainforest looking, you know, environment. But that was just a brief snippet of our tour there. Most of it was highlands and fog and cold, and it was crazy. We'd be on the hillside and then some Peruvian woman would walk over the top of the hill and walk down and want to sell us some like bracelets or something, and then she disappears again. Like, we're in the middle of nowhere. I don't know where she came from.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely like I was definitely, my eyes were opened by it. You know, there's still people with like mud brick houses and no electricity and no plumbing out in the, you know, rural Peru.
Wow.
Just kind of amazed at the lifestyle. You know, I hear kids walk like 2 hours to school and 2 hours home after school.
Wow.
And we definitely saw that, kids in the middle of nowhere walking down the road. And then something else that stuck out was dogs. Like, there's dogs on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. And we went down the same road, you know, one day, went down the road the next day, and the same dogs will be there like 100 feet apart. Like, they're all, I don't know if they depend on drivers to feed them or why they're there, but it was strange. Yeah, in the middle of nowhere, there's just dogs every so often on the side of the road.
That's fascinating.
I must ask, did you see any tarantulas while you were there?
Did I see tarantulas?
Mm.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. We were there for, the tour was 10 days and we saw probably 15 species of tarantula while we were there. Super impressive, impressed with, yeah, the tarantulas. We saw a lot of tarantulas while we were there. A lot of the Haplotremus, and there seems to be a lot of like local variations. Our tour guide was saying, you know, Haplotremus vilcanota or Haplotremus CF vilcanota. So like most closely resembles vilcanota, but there's a few different, like, you know, like the one carapace was all white, and the rest of the spider the same, and then one carapace white with a black triangle and one carapace white with a black circle in the middle. So like these minor variations as we go from one mountain to the next or one valley to the next. Stuff we don't, or either it's undescribed or really don't know what they are. Some stuff even he's saying he'd never seen himself before.
Wow.
The selling point for me on the tour guide was that he spent time with Rick West and some of their taxonomists. Like, he took Rick West around and collected material for the Haplotremus paper that came out recently. So we saw some of the same places that the taxonomists did when they were doing their research in the Haplotremus. Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool. Are any of the Haplotremus species like available in the hobby right now, or are they still
they're definitely not common. One that was available some years ago was Haplotremus albipes or albeeps. It's
okay.
A dwarf. I think they were around briefly. I don't I don't really know anybody with them right now, but they're around before. And then actually a few months back from Europe, we had these Theraphosinae species Inca gold. And kind of a bland picture, you know, a spider that needed a molt. The picture was not a great shot or representation of the spider. But while we were there and we were posting them, there was a European that contacted me and said, hey, like, you have those on your store. Like, and I didn't even realize that the spider we were oohing and aahing over on the hillside was a spider that I already had in my store.
Oh, wow.
It was just that the photo wasn't great, you know? And so when he pointed it out, I was like, okay, that makes sense. You know, and he sent me pictures of the juveniles and the female, the adult, which looked just like the ones we were seeing. And so, yeah, that one's, yeah, Haplotremus Inca gold. So that's available.
Very cool. Cause
yeah,
I believe that it was listed as a Theraphosinae. Yeah. So it's a Haplotremus. So that's good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. At first, I guess they didn't know or wasn't sure, but, by the time I posted it, they were calling it Haplotremus. And which makes sense. That's what was in the area where we were looking, you know, the elevation and that's what we kept seeing was Haplotremus. So,
how cool.
I mean, yeah, there was some kickback on one of my posts saying, oh, you don't know for sure it's Haplotremus. You know, it's not, you're not examining the palpal bulbs. If you're not sure, don't call it that, which they have a good point. So it's not 100% Haplotremus, but
sure.
Likely, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. That's really cool, though. I mean, was it very hard? Like, was it very difficult while you were in Peru to find tarantulas? Or was it like, I walk 10 feet and lift a rock and there it is?
Mostly that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we got into town, or we got into a place where we were staying, and we went across the street and we're looking on the hillside and we're finding things on the hillside, juvenile and kind of an adult 20 feet down the road on the hillside. But our guide, yeah, the guide took us to these locations, you know, and we got out of the car and we flipped some rocks and they'd be there one after the other, you know. There's only one place we went that, it was kind of hard. It was an undescribed Haplotremus, kind of this greenish bronze shimmer to it. And this is the one that we spent quite a bit of time on the hillside and only found a couple of them. So that was like the rarest one or the hardest one to find.
Wow, I can imagine. How beautiful. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was almost like losing its... The excitement kind of was waning, you know. It's like we've seen so many, you know, like it was like... Which is, yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, it's another spider.
Do you see other stuff?
Yeah, we saw these little lizards. They kind of looked to me like a skink almost, and they were kind of slow. Not like the lizards I find in California, you know, they bolt when they, you know, run from you. These guys sit on your hand, and then we found a couple snakes. They're a colubrid, little, you know, maybe 18 inch or so.
I think I saw a picture that you posted on your Facebook about the snake that you found, or one of the snakes, and it actually looked almost like a rainbow boa, but if it was that small, it was probably a little rat snake or something.
I found the snake first. And then I did, but I didn't touch it because I didn't, just scared of, you know, potentially venomous or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it got away, and I told the group, oh, I got away. You know, I don't know if I should have grabbed it or not. And they didn't know what it was based on my description. And then Tom Patterson came across another one, and he picked it up by the tail, and he's yelling to the guide, is it venomous? Is it venomous? Is it venomous?
That sounds like Tom. From what I know, I don't know. How fun is that? So was Tom Patterson very, like, he sounds like he's really adventurous and just like, you know, not afraid to get into things and to, is that accurate, would you say?
Yeah, he was, you know, a lot of the times the first person to find the spider. He's at the top of the hill before the rest of us.
Wow.
He was definitely out there getting it, you know, while we were out there. Yeah, he didn't, you know, he was talking about, I'll sleep when I get home, you know, I'll take a break when we get home. He was all gung ho for getting out and finding more stuff. And, you know, he really enjoys his collection of like photography or like taking pictures of everything, right? He likes to have his own pictures. Mm-hmm. And so he was excited to add to his photo collection, you know, taking pictures of all the different things. It's cool to hear his input on different things, and it was great to spend time with him. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. It just sounds so cool. Like, he seems like a really fun, interesting dude. Hardcore, you know.
Yeah.
That's what Gatner in here. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, he's so Tom Patterson here in the States, he's a breeder, so he's also got his own website called Hardcore Arachnids. You do now?
I do okay. Know. I remember Trenchler Cat getting some. Yeah, I remember him sending her some spiders. I had no idea who he was.
You're fine. You're good, Simon. I appreciate it. No worries. Go ahead.
He's old timer. He's been doing it for 20 plus years. You know, he was always somebody I looked up to, and he was always open, like, to answer questions about husbandry or breeding and that sort of thing. He was always really generous with his time or his feedback, you know, willing to give feedback to everybody. Really nice guy.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that, because he seems like he's really kind of goofy and just like a lot of fun. And I would love to meet him for sure. I haven't met him. So, moving on, another awesome member of your party was Richard Stewart. What is he like in real life?
Yeah, I was nervous to meet Richard, but we seem to get along really well. I think he had some maybe hesitation about traveling. Okay. You know, being out of the country, I think he was really looking into like some of the politics and the crime that happens, that kind of thing. He was really, I think, maybe guarded might be the right word.
He had some reservations.
Yeah. And then doesn't speak any of the language. So I think he did a lot of research before the trip. I'm afraid that, you know, he had a little bit maybe more work to do while he was there than the rest of us. You know, a lot of us were there enjoying getting photos. And he was lugging around his camera gear, you know, the whole time.
Yeah.
And so he get out of the car and he's got to get his cameras ready and his lenses. And, you know, he's got he asked me to carry his camera a couple of times. And that thing, it's like on a big, you know, it had to been 15 or 20 pounds. It seemed like his camera. And so he's carrying that up the sides of the hill. And he was, you know, thrilled to be there and having a good time, you know, so it was cool to.
That is cool.
Just. To support, and to be a part of the behind the scenes. I'm really looking forward to the videos that he puts out. I was so impressed, man. I went to Pittsburgh to meet him for the first time, and he's like, "Oh, I want to do a video." And so he brought his camera to Pittsburgh. He got me on camera a little bit, and then he took off for like 10, it seemed like he filmed for like 10 minutes, and I'm like, "Aren't you gonna film? You know, aren't you gonna do some video?" And what he was able to come up with the amount of like footage that he got was just like totally impressive to me. You know, so it's cool to learn about his methods for his videos. And I guess he says that, you know, it's easier for him to kind of keep it, you know, he doesn't want to overwhelm himself with footage. right? He doesn't want to get an hour's worth of footage and have to sort through it all. So it was, yeah, it was cool to see the, yeah, his strategy or his plans, you know, and
yeah. I mean, he makes these videos that are just so well done and just incredibly beautiful and amazing. I mean, that's kind of, he kind of inspired me to do the same, you know, but I'm nowhere near his level. Like, he is just, he's phenomenal, very talented. So I can imagine that, you know, he takes himself very seriously, you know? So that's cool. Yeah. That's really cool to hear.
There's the part of the trip where we're on the side of the road for the Lienethal. It's like that gold carapace one. Really,
okay.
Lienethal uniformis. It's really pretty, black and gold. And everybody's, you know, taking turns with photos, and he's got his macro lens and he's getting macro shots of the spider's eyes, you know. And he was just so thrilled. It was cool to see him, you know, in his zone, like so thrilled to get these like crisp, beautiful photos of the spider. And he was so stoked over the, you know, the photos that he got. And
I can only imagine. That is so killer.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. It was cool to see just, you know, really, I don't know how to explain it. Like, we're all like, it just seems so professional, and like these diehard enthusiasts, like on the side of the road, it's starting to rain and we're out here taking pictures of it. It was just like really committed people to their craft, you know, and yeah, level of professionalism. That was just, and I was grateful to be there.
I bet it was pretty cool to see everybody kind of in their own zone, you know, and doing their thing. So that's really amazing. What you're so lucky.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you happen upon any like llamas or anything while you were in Peru as well, or like other wildlife?
Yeah. One of the places that we were looking for spiders had alpaca. I don't know what the difference is. They're calling them alpacas.
Alpaca.
Yeah, they were right there on the side of the hill where we were flipping rocks. So I got video of us with tarantulas, and there's alpacas 20 feet behind us. You know, so alpaca, pigs, chickens, cows. Yeah, a lot of livestock. It's definitely part of the Peruvian's culture or livelihood is all the livestock. Yeah.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, for lunch, yeah, actually.
We've got alpacas here. So,
you have alpacas there?
We farm alpacas and horse creatures. Things like that. So, yeah. Sounds like this idea. We're very livestock orientated in the UK. Yeah,
alpacas are interesting animals too, because they're very vocal, from what I remember. Like, so we usually get like a Western stock show here in Denver, because it's Denver's a really big hub for a lot of things. So, as far as like the West goes, we're right in the middle of all that. And so, of course, during like the Western stock show, they bring alpacas in, and they're just so vocal. Were the ones in Peru just as vocal, or because they hum and do all sorts of weird things?
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Okay.
I don't remember. I don't think I could even imitate the sound that they'd make. Yeah, I can't remember. No. Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember that.
Well, that's all right. It's just an oddball question. Just
Yeah. Yeah.
My trip is going down the Peruvian Amazon on a boat. I really would love to, you know. And I just stopped where I felt like it was really just getting out and having a mooch around. That's so the Peruvian part would have been something I would have loved, but not when it was. I would have preferred to have been more inland into the east, to where it meets the Amazon and Ecuador.
Mm.
That would have been awesome,
like right at the border.
Rainforest itself.
Yeah.
I would have loved that. I mean, the flipping spiders on a hillside, flipping rock for spiders, that would have creeped me out. If I'd have been finding a spider every rock, I would not sleep at all, ever. especially tarantulas. But, you know, if you go in the jungle, and see all sorts of weird stuff. That wouldn't bother me. But the tarantula part, nah. Nah, that'd be, very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable with the around still.
That's understandable, Simon. They're not for everybody. It's okay. I saw Tom Patterson got bit by a funnel. Yeah. Was it a funnel web spider?
It was by that Lenithil, yeah.
Okay.
Lenithil uniformis. Yeah, a couple fang marks on his hand. Yeah, I guess he didn't get envenomated, I guess, or didn't seem lucky. To. So it's just the pierce the skin, yeah.
So he didn't really get like the full experience of the venom or anything. I was going to ask, like, what kind of symptoms did he have? Like, what's going on? Because a lot of people that I know also have Linothele. I'm probably pronouncing it totally wrong, but, the funnel web species, I mean, they're fascinating, awesome spiders, but it would be good to know what to expect from a bite.
Yeah. I don't really remember exactly the situation either. I think that at some point when they were digging it out, it got him. I don't know if he went to grab and it was underneath the rock or something. I don't remember exactly the situation, but yeah, he definitely got bit, but didn't seem to be any symptoms or any sign of envenomation. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Not that I wanted him to get envenomated or anything. You know.
Would have been interesting to witness the effects or to be able to document the effects.
I don't think there's a better person for that. You know what I mean? Like, he would have been very detailed and been able to really tell us what was happening there. But all good, no worries.
He said he'd actually never been bit before.
Oh well, yeah, no, I believe that. So, you know, because I've been keeping for about 5 years, a little over 5 years now, and I still have yet to be bitten. So, you know, knocking on wood, I don't want to be bit, but yeah, I mean, I think that goes to if you respect the tarantula and the spider's body language and you give them what they need, you know, proper space, proper burrowing substrate and, you know, plenty of hides and stuff like that, then the chances of you being bit is pretty low for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You're not like putting your hands in and messing with the actual animal. So.
No, certainly not. I mean,
bitten are really, really low.
Yeah. I mean, I have a couple of species of tarantulas that are actually really curious and will want to come out and hang out on my hand and stuff. Like I have an Afanopelma calcodes, I would say she's a sub-adult. She's taken forever. I've had her for 5 years and she's still not an adult. But she absolutely will come out and want to hang out on my hand and just, you know, venture around. So, you know, even my grandma stole a pulchra. She'll do the same thing. She'll come out, she'll come be adventurous and never had any kind of defensive postures or threat poses or anything from her. So I guess it just depends on the spider, but I mean, I'm not going to go sticking my hand in the, you know, Haplopelma or the, you know, my Cereopagus or, you know, Levinum. I'm not going to put my finger in the burrow. That's, you're just asking for it then, you know.
But, she's got one of those. I know she's got one of those, maybe two.
Yeah.
Lividium.
Yeah, they're a beautiful species, absolutely, but they can be very spicy. So
yeah, I keep saying that. I keep a lid on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's scary.
Yeah.
And Darlinghi as well, I think is the other one. I'm a bit, you know.
Oh, the Ceratogyrus darlinghi?
Yeah, whatever you said, darlinghi, yeah. I can't part of the name of spiders. I've just got my head's full of all so many.
Well, you do the same for me with mantises. I don't know mantises very...
I don't do the common names of the spiders.
I appreciate that.
Remember the species rather than the genus. So I love Darlinghi and I love the you know, some of the others, but I tend not to remember the common names, because to me they all look the same. I'm a bit of a spider racist, to be honest. They all look the same. They're hairy, they're ugly, they've got eight legs, and they're over there most of the time. That's great, you know. But I don't find them exciting at all or anything. So it's like oh, it's a spider. If it's more than this, it's no good to me because the mantis can't eat it. So you know, that's my view about the spiders. But now now I'm stocking them to sell.
Yes,
I have to pay more interest in them, which I've been feeding them this week, which I've never ever done before, because me in the same room as an open box of tarantulas is just something that doesn't happen. Mm. But I've been feeding them, and I don't know if I'm feeding them with the right things. I suppose you'd better tell me that, because I've been giving them fruit flies, and they're about a centimeter. Mm. These guys, so I don't know whether they need more or what.
Yeah, fruit flies are a good source of, you know, food for the real little guys. So yeah, that makes total sense.
Absolutely. Oh, so that's okay then. I'm doing okay.
Sorry, what?
What else to give them?
Probably use fruit flies for your mantids too.
Only when the first instar. After that, I give them roaches. Fruit flies are no good, really, for mantis, to be honest with you. There's nothing in them at all. But spiders seem to enjoy them. They eat them, and so do scorpions. They're no good for mantis, no. Not really. It's just convenience for humans, I think, why we give them fruit flies.
Yeah, probably, huh? So, okay, Tyler, about importing and exporting tarantulas, how does that work? How is the system set up, obviously? Because I know you were talking with Richard about that a little bit. And so, you know, I just kind of wanted to touch base on that. Like, how does it work? Do you have to, like, go through a lot of channels or...
I've never done exports. I've only bought, you know, brought into the country instead of never shipped out of the country. Of course, spiders are cheaper in Europe and other places in the world. So it makes sense to buy elsewhere and sell here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have a import license through the Fish and Wildlife. And you got to find somebody that will sell to you. And sometimes these people want like a minimum sale, maybe $10,000 or so, you know.
Wow.
And you agree to a purchase and maybe make a payment or pay in full, however it works with the person you're buying from.
Okay.
And you set a date, and then you have to report to the Fish and Wildlife, like, hey, I'm bringing in this stuff at this place, you know, and you list out everything that you're bringing in. Uh-huh. And so then they'll have an opportunity to inspect the package. There's like 20 or so different port of entries around the country where Fish and Wildlife have offices set up to inspect the boxes.
Okay.
And so they'll have the opportunity to search through the box, make sure that your quantities are right, that your labels are right. You work with Fish and Wildlife, and you got to work with a broker who does the custom, because there's a customs clearance side. Like, there's all kinds of agencies that regulate import things, right. You know, Border Patrol, Customs, Fish and Wildlife. There's USDA for like other. Yeah, one time my box got flagged for USDA, which is not, tarantulas and scorpions don't need to go through USDA, but USDA checks like other bugs, I think, like butterflies or anything that can affect crops.
So
some things, some animals do have to have a USDA license and search, and so you got to be careful about what you're bringing and what kind of authorities have to be involved and what the process is. So it's kind of like
a lot.
It is. Of course, that's kind of where the opportunity lies. You know, it's a lot of red tape and a lot of stuff to sort out and juggle. But, you know, of course, that's part of what, I'd say that part of what I get paid to do, you know, is to go through all that hassle, right? And so, not sure if I thoroughly answered that, if there's any other parts to it.
You did wonderfully. I appreciate it very much because, you know, I've always been kind of curious about that process and how it works. So I'm thankful to, you know, people like you, Tyler, who go through all of that, because for me, I wouldn't even do it. So thank you.
It's, you know, fish and wildlife is not very consistent, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll go to, say, Seattle, Port of Seattle, and they'll tell me, oh, you can't have anything from Costa Rica, or, oh, you can't have anything from Yemen, like Belfuri. And they took stuff before, you know, thousands of dollars in animals they took, which should have been legal. You know, if I go to LA, you can't have anything from Venezuela. You know, so it's like learning too, in my experience, like learning what I can bring and what port, you know. I mean, I I feel like I'm cheating or something by doing that, but in reality, there's different places around the country that allow different things through for whatever reason.
So
depending on what I'm bringing, I have to pick which part of the country to bring it in.
Right. And, wow. Simon, I know you have something to say. What's up?
No, I'm just amazed because I don't understand why it's a single country, why you don't have one rule for every single port. Like, what you can bring in is this, what you can't is this. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that. That's completely confusing. Because like you say, if you can bring something in from, say, Venezuela, in Maine, for instance, and then post it to LA, what's the difference? You might as well just bring it in LA.
Right.
So what's the difference? Why can't they, like, how to do this? That's where.
I mean, the United States is a pretty big landmass, so each state and each region, per se, has different crops, different agriculture that certain, you know, certain species of like you said, butterfly or things like that can really, really have a negative impact. And so that's why. And it's actually kind of silly that they would do it regionally like that, because again, just like what you said, yeah, you can bring it through Maine, but you're going to send it to Florida or to, you know, to Washington or wherever. Right. So
yeah, it's no big deal. I mean, you can't have a different rule in one state.
Yeah.
From the state next to it.
Right.
And then expect, you know, everyone to say, oh, we better not take that over the border. Because that's not gonna happen. That's just nonsense.
Well, and you know, it's each state has different restrictions on different things.
Yeah, I've always found America crazy for the way that the way they deal with the states. Mm-hmm. Also, the other thing that I find crazy with America is your export laws are almost as strict as your import laws.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I find utterly crazy. Like, if I wanted to buy Uthinka for Chinese mantis, that isn't even a native of the USA.
No.
So it's actually an invasive species. Mm-hmm. But if I wanted to buy Uthinka from you guys, I have to pay extra tax. And it's like, why? You're getting rid. I'm offering to get rid of an invasive species from you. Right? I'll take it. And you're saying, oh, no, you have to pay extra for that. And it's not even yours. It's just it just blows my mind the way they will just stop things at the border. Like if I want to send something to France,
sure,
I can put it in a box and I can stick it in the post office and send it to France.
Well, it's, and like, that's one thing that I do like about Europe is that you guys are so very interconnected. It's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you can get to France on a train and it's not very costly. Whereas here in the States, you know, it can be quite an expense just to travel between the states. So that's one thing you guys do right.
I have no idea, Tyler, how you can cope with all the import nonsense. And the costs. Like I've got a friend in California who has a bookshop, and I've seen the prices he sells things for, and I'm always like amazed. But that some of them are 10 times the price of what we would pay here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow. And then he explains the export and import and all the rest of it, and I go, oh yeah, that's fine. And I don't know how you even have a hobby over there with that sort of money that you have to pay for things.
Because of, thankfully, because dedicated enthusiasts like Tyler, like Tom Patterson, and people like me who are willing to send mature males to places that need them. And, you know, thankfully, I think the hobby sustains itself in that aspect because, you know, we're, yeah, you know, I may live in Colorado, but, you know, I go on Spinder or something and we can find a female here or a male there of a species that we need, you know. So, I mean, we're kind of interconnected in that way. It's just there's a few loops and, you know, kind of guidelines that you have to follow. But for the most part, it's okay, you know. I don't know.
Like, I don't know how your shows work, but there's a lot of shows in the UK. There's a lot of invert shows, hell of a lot of spider shows in the UK. When you do shows over there, do you go to a lot of shows? Do you just stay in the one state, or do you go like across the country doing to different shows in different states? Or,
well, that depends on the vendors. So each vendor has the choice of going to each show that, okay, so you'll have basically the main people of the show. So like we'll just use Repticon as an example. They're going to have a schedule of all the states and places and cities that they're going to be. Now the vendor is going to pay that conglomerate essentially to have like tables and booths, and they can go as many tables and booths as they want all throughout the cities. But each table and booth, of course, is going to cost like a certain amount of fee, and so they can and they have to travel themselves, right? So I do know quite a few like local vendors here in Denver who really only hit like the Denver shows, maybe sometimes Kansas or like Utah, you know, surrounding states, but otherwise, like there are some pretty good vendors and like big vendors that will go all over the nation, but I would say, like, you know, for let's say Spider Shop, you know, Tyler, it was really great for him to come to Denver, but he doesn't always do that. Sometimes he'll go to this show or to California or, you know, so it's really up to the vendors. And so that's kind of how that works. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so it must be quite difficult, though. I mean, with America being such a big country. Like,
it can be, yeah.
You'd be on the road every day, wouldn't you? If you went to all the shows, I should imagine.
And Tyler might be able, you probably know better than I do, just like how that kind of works and like the best ways to go about it.
Yeah, just from personal experience, I know there's vendors that'll do shows. They don't have much of an online presence or not big business online, and they depend on the shows for their income and their sales. And they'll travel long distance to go to shows all the time, and that's their main income is shows. But for me, yeah, a lot of the local shows are, you know, a nice payout sometimes, but the shows for us, for Spider Shop, are more of like a like a marketing and a promotional thing, you know. A lot of the shows we do, Denver was decent, but sometimes the sales of the show just covers the cost of being there. And it's just about being out there, meeting Leah and meeting other, you know, enthusiasts and customers. Right. And so for me, I'd like to, like, we went to Pennsylvania this past year, looking to do North Carolina later this year. Cool. And kind of just hitting around the country, just to make an appearance, to show face, to meet people, to promote, you know, and that's kind of the driving force for me to do the shows, is the marketing or promotion, not necessarily the sales that I would get.
Yeah, that makes total sense, because I like to go to shows, essentially just to network and to, you know, talk with people in the hobby and kind of get, you know, obviously I, you know, propose to you about, you know, being on the show, being on the podcast. So that's kind of what I do. I just network and find people to interview and, you know, and of course I, you know, occasionally bring home animals and stuff, but yeah, shows are definitely a little different here, Simon, you know?
Yeah, I speak to a lot of people and they say, oh, we haven't got this show, we haven't got that show, you know, we haven't got that many shows towards here, because it seems like here, like every other week, there's an invert show, specifically an invert show, not just, you know, there's not reptiles or not, we even have a specific tarantula shows.
Oh, wow.
Which are, you know, for the old UK, like the British Tarantula Society and stuff like that, old shows. And funny enough, the guy who runs all the invertebrate shows, I think there's five or six every year in different parts of the country, is hosted by the Spider Shop, the UK Spider Shop. There's a lot so many shows. You can't go. Sorry, Tyler.
That's happening now in our local area. We're totally getting washed out with so many shows, which is, I don't think it's a benefit to the vendor. No,
I don't. I've got 100% agree with you, because you're like, if you're going to get tables at shows, you're like, should I get tables there? Or people are going to hold on to the money and not go to that one and go to this one instead.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's a bit... hit and miss, I think, now. When there's a lot of shows, it does get a bit hit and miss. It doesn't matter if they have money to go to all the shows.
Yeah. I can imagine going to, like, all of the shows for the Show Me Reptiles shows, you know what I mean, would be quite a venture, but also, like, that's what you would really have to focus on, and that would be pretty much all you do. So I'm glad for... the local vendors here, you know, but I also really, really love when I get to see vendors from other, you know, outside, obviously. So yeah, I mean, it's shows are great. I love going to them. I love, you know, being a part of that. And eventually I will have an Inverticast booth. So I'm working on doing that probably within the next year or so. I'll have my own booth. So that'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully we can get Simon in with the Zoom call or something.
I might actually do that next month. Maybe.
Absolutely. Yeah. If we want to broadcast from the show, I think that would be fun.
In Bristol in August. Okay. So I might have to get something and put something on the table I'm not even going. Somebody else is running the tables for me, because Bristol's like 5 hours away from me and it's too much. So I just send in the animals and they're going to set the table and stuff. So I might see what I can do about I haven't even got any promo stuff for myself, to be honest. Sure. To put on the table, because I usually just fill them full of animals.
Yeah.
So I don't get any promo cards or stands or anything. It's just animals, complete. That's it, you know.
Of course.
I'll have to have a look though and see. Yeah, I'll do that. I'll have a look at that.
Cool.
Check that.
Well, we're down to like the last 5 minutes of the show, so let's do our shameless plugs. What do you guys say? Tyler, I'll go ahead and let you start. Do you have anything that you want to promote? Anything coming up this week or month or year, whatever it is, go ahead.
Thanks. Summer kind of is always a challenge, I think, for vendors. It's kind of a slower season. I think there's this is a good time to be a buyer. I think there's a lot of sales going on, a lot of discounts. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a sale on our Peruvian species this weekend. So it's 33% off on all of the Peruvian species. That's at spidershop.com. Yeah. And we're going to be vending at the Puyallup show in Puyallup, Washington. This is July 13th and 14th. And then 2 weeks later, we'll be in Anaheim, California for the Reptile Super Show. So that's the end of July. And that's our near future for Spider Shop. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So if you're in the Anaheim area and you want to meet Tyler, go to that cool show in Anaheim. I think he's awesome. I was so glad I got to meet you in person. It was really cool talking with you and, like, you know, getting a chance to network.
Yeah, likewise, Leah. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. All right, Simon, what do you got going on?
Loads. lots of stuff. We've got the Great Ants Exhibition tables there in August the 3rd, but don't quote me on it because I can't remember. We've just started new lines of mystery boxes, which will be mantis mystery boxes, which will be mantis and tarantulas in them, which is should be fun. I thought mantis mystery boxes do okay, so why not try that mantis mystery box and see if that's any good. Still making a documentary on dead leaf mantis,
cool.
But not getting the time due to this lot demanding it. and yes, the football's on very shortly, so I'm also, because I'm European, we have to watch the football whether you like it or not. And that's
go Manchester United.
No, not that football. England.
No? Okay.
England.
Cool. Let's see. I am finishing up actually quite a few videos. I'm just doing some voiceovers and stuff. So be watching on my channel because I do have an unboxing that I'm going to be releasing of the Spider Shop. So watch for that because it's coming out this week. Otherwise, that's really all I got going on. I'm just, you know, glad to be home, but got a lot to do. Got to make sure these guys get fed, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you everybody for watching. Thank you, Simon, for joining us. And thank you so much, Tyler, for coming on the podcast and talking all about, you know, Tom and Richard and Peru and, Spider Shop, and we absolutely love it. And anytime you want to come back on, you are more than welcome. We'll see you in the future. And guys, go get those Peruvian species off of the Spider Shop, 33% off. That's pretty rad. Check it out. Thank you again.
Thanks, Leah. Thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Tyler. Nice to meet you, mate.
Yeah, good to meet you. Thank you.